Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, if you want to push the button, you do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're gonna need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 2, Episode 22, 3 Minutes. This week we catch up with Michael, and I have an important question for our hosts. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm asking, beachside or cliffside yurt in Yurtville? I would, of course, choose a luxurious beachside yurt.
You fool. My name is Jenna Robinson. This proves to me that you've never camped in a yurt camp. You want the cliffside to protect yourself from the wind.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I am going to have to break the tie and go with Joanna here. Cliffside, because I got to keep my eyes on the horizon. You never know when, like, a random sailboat is going to show up.
Boat!
Timely. If this is your first time joining the show, welcome to the closing act of Season 2. We are rewatching the ABC series Lost, which lasted for 6 seasons a while back. We're watching an episode every week and doing a podcast about it. We are up to Season 2, Episode 22. If this is your first time watching Lost, this podcast is still for you, even though it's called Lost Rewatch Podcast. We split the podcast into 2 sections. The first one is called The Calm, and we will only be discussing episodes up through Season 2, Episode 22, 3 minutes. And then the second half of the podcast, we call The Storm for Storm of Spoilers. It's a George R. R. Martin book title pun, and we'll include everything about Lost through Season 6. This week, we're going to maybe discuss some details that we learned this week that are more deceptive than they seem, if this is your first time seeing it. But otherwise, we need to unravel some things in the storm. If you want to support the show, besides doing what you are right now, which is dedicating your time to rewatching Lost and listening to the podcast, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There, you could donate some money to us, and in return, we will give you some delicious bonus content. We have multiple levels that give different bonus things, everywhere from hanging out in the Slack to different podcast content to watch-alongs. Joanna is doing a very special quarantine watch project with Kristen Russo of the Buffering Podcast. They're doing something called Feels Like the First Time, and it is letting them rewatch Mad Max this week. Joanna, how's it going?
It's going great. Dave, what did you learn about the Garbage Pail Kids from this week's episode of Feels Like the First Time?
A lot from the history of how they sort of came out of the Cabbage Patch Kids, including the name of their creator, which I did not know, but Kristen Russo knew more about Garbage Pail Kids, than she will about Mad Max, having watched Mad Max, probably.
I think that's true. That, like, Kristen Russo knows more about Garbage Pail Kids than I've forgotten about Garbage Pail Kids. So, or strike that, reverse it. Okay. So, yeah, we do stuff like that, in our Patreon, Slack, and in our feed. Come join us. Neil, how many bonus podcast episodes can, like, someone signs up for our Patreon and they want to go back and listen to our old bonus episodes. How many bonus episodes, are there to get them through their quarantine?
Oh, yeah. This one's a fun one. There are, as of this recording, 133 bonus podcasts of The Storm.
There's so many bonus episodes.
Just a lot of us talking.
Yeah. So if all you want this quarantine spring, is to hear our voices rattling around your head. Boy, have we got a Patreon for you. Yeah. So, I mean, it's genuinely a great place to hang out. There's a lot of stuff in the Slack that, you know, we participate in, but then there's this whole thriving community in there that is independent of us. They have been organizing all these, what they call Slacktivities during quarantine. They do like trivia hangouts and live watches and all kinds of stuff. So they're just,
it's almost like having friends.
Almost, but they almost live like the files. They live inside your computer. Anyway. So we love our Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/stormspoilers. There's a few other ways for you to interact with us. You can always hop on Twitter and follow us at Storm Podcast. There you get a lot of updates, get to vote on our Jungle of Kistry poll or stuff like that. You can go to our website, stormpodcast.com, for a calendar, upcoming calendar of, you know, not live shows because we don't leave our house anymore, but, you know, our schedule, etc. And you can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. And you can leave us a review if you like. So I've got one review and one email to read before we dive into the com. This review, I just noticed the name of the person who left it. From Canada. I'm not going to do a Canadian accent, but the name they used on this review is horse ?
Yes.
That is dedication.
That's beautiful. Thank you. 5 stars. Excellent pod. Great host. Hello and welcome to a 5-star. Oh, no, I'm going to try to, I'm going to do it again. Hello and welcome to a 5-star review. I've been a fan of the pod since the days of the Lady Stoneheart Truthers. I was reluctant to join you on the island because I heard Lost was a show with a lot of unsolved mysteries, but I needed my weekly dose of Joanna, Dave, and Neil. So here I am. These hosts are a pleasure to listen to and they've got me hooked. Joanna's insights are thought provoking and she addresses all the things I want to yell at my TV. She also gives Kate's arms and Zaid's tank top the attention they deserve. I love Dave's confidence and his tinfoil hat theories. When challenged, he doesn't back down, but puts on his tinfoil coat and tinfoil socks and goes further. I'm here for it. Neil is hilarious and always de-escalates the conversation when it gets too heated for this Canadian's comfort. I love all his production fun facts and will always ask for more. These three are very knowledgeable and keep me laughing. My one ask... Yes, this is an interesting ask. My one ask is that you try to keep the storm section relevant to the episode or season you're discussing, like you did with Game of Thrones. I'm always interested in how what you were talking about relates to what we've just watched. Keep in mind that some of your storm listeners are first-time watchers who want to be included in the discussion. You're not spoiling, you're enriching. Lastly, you're all way too humble for how good you are. You don't need to tighten it up or strap it down. You're just great. So thank you so much, Horse.
God, but tighten it up and Horse. It's callback theater in the reviews.
So thank you. Thank you for that great review, Horse?
Horse.
All right. And this email comes from Destiny with 2 E's. And what's great is she signed her email Destiny. And then in parentheses, she put like 4 lost quotes that center around the word destiny, which is like, like, I only have like, I think 1 lost quote that centers around my name, which is like, Joanna's drowning. I don't know.
Joanna died this morning.
Joanna's drowning. Joanna died this morning. And like, Kate stole poor Joanna's ID. That's one that has my name in it. I'm going to start signing my emails that way. Anyway, okay. There's a snake in my boot. So Destiny, is a buffering, listener who hopped over for this. So hello and welcome, to our continuously intertwined worlds of buffering and storm. So Destiny says, Lost was my first introduction to television, or at least to good television. I remember thinking that the pilot episode of Lost was called The Pilot because the plane pilot got killed by the smoke monster. And many of the tropes that you've been discussing the show, like Charlie the drug addict rock star or the love triangle with Kate, Jack, and Sawyer, were the first introductions I had to stories like that. And so they did not seem like tropes at all. Hearing your sometimes critical views of the show are often quite eye-opening to me, as the show still sort of exists somewhere in me that's wrapped in a lot of nostalgia. Because damn, I loved this show, and I still do. I love nearly every character. I wanted to be Kate. She taught me a tree climbing trick that I used often. And I very much felt like she should have bleep.
redacted.
And I would make up stories in my head where I imagined I was on the island with everyone. On this note, and partly why I'm writing now, I remember being so affected by the ending of Two for the Road. Like, red wedding level shock rattled little 9-year-old me. And I remember a lot of the stories I would make up involving me somehow being on the island and managing to stop Michael from killing Ana Lucia and freeing quote unquote Henry. I always loved Ana Lucia for some reason, so it was always surprising to hear the discussion on the pod about her character not working. To me, she was cool and strong and a loner, and little me felt like I had been seen in her, I guess. I even made Ana Lucia my name in Spanish class in high school, meaning that I spent 4 years writing it on the top of my assignments and tests. Lost is my introduction to the art of television. It was also my introduction to all of the different ideas and cultures that were shown through the show's diverse cast. It taught me at a young age that people are capable of doing terrible things and yet still having good in them that is worth saving and appreciating. And after all this time, that is what Lost means to me, that people are bad and good and complicated and often not what they first seem. And the most important thing in this mess of a life we all get is the relationships we build with each other as we work past our issues and strive to be better. And that maybe if we remember that, we can all save the world a little bit together. Desiree. And then she says, P.S. Like your guest on this episode, I also consider Lost numbers when choosing things like airplane seats. I almost always go for seat 23A because Jack was in seat 23B on flight 815. So I'm obviously not going to pick a middle seat. And then PPS, I am a nurse and have cared for COVID-19 patients, and I greatly appreciate your pod as an escape in these crazy times. Thank you all for staying home and for being smart. 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42. So, thank
you. Yeah. I would just, on a personal note, to note that I have not left my home yet in 2020.
That's not all of 2020?
No. Since. But it's got to be since February, at least. Did I leave in January?
Neil, you were still working.
Are you transcending?
Were you at the fruit market for at least a little bit of this year?
No.
Well, then I'm not sure you've left the house.
Yeah, no, I'm extreme social distancing.
All right, well, we are hunkering in place. Thank you, Destiny, for this that lovely email, and also for all the work that you're doing to help folks who are suffering because of COVID-19. We really, really appreciate all of our healthcare workers. So that goes for anyone who's listening, who is on the front lines of all this. And I'm glad that our dumb jokes about Lost can help anyone through this. We need all the help we can get right now, I think. So thank you.
Well, you know who doesn't need help, or maybe does need help? It depends on where you stand on Michael this week. Neil, what happened on the island this week? Oh, and happy Thanksgiving.
Well, Dave, funny you should mention. This episode was directed by Stephen Williams. It was written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, all three of whom have been on this podcast. It aired on May 17th, 2006. It takes place on day 65 on the island, which I was told by Dave before we began recording was Thanksgiving 2004. So happy Thanksgiving to our survivors. In flashbacks, we see the story of Michael's disappearance from his perspective. We watch as he's captured by the others, as he donates blood back at their camp and where he meets a person whose name is literally Ms. Clue. He gets 3 minutes to see Walt. Walt is there. But then Ms. Clue instructs him that if he ever wants to have Walt back and if he ever wants to escape this place, he has to rescue quote unquote Henry and one other thing, which we'll get to. On the island, well, in present day, I guess everything takes place on the island this week. In present day, Michael begins executing the next stage of his plan, which includes recruiting a very specific list of fellow survivors. Like, he really, really, really needs just Kate, Jack, Hurley, and Sawyer. And that's it. Definitely not anyone else, especially Saeed.
Just the most popular people on the show.
Just the cool kids.
That's just so convenient.
Yep. In the hatch, Mr. Echo gives up building the church so that he can push the button. With nothing better to do and Sawyer busy preparing for Operation Walt, Charlie finds a giant stash of heroin that he immediately throws into the ocean. So, you know, progress. Back on the beach, elsewhere on the beach, Charlie gives Claire some vaccines for the baby. Locke gives up, leaves his crutches behind and appears to be healed. And the survivors lay Ana Lucia and Libby to rest. It all ends with Saeed figuring out that Michael has been compromised and Hurley deciding that he's going on the mission. Oh, right. And a sailboat shows up out of nowhere. It's crazy. Fun fact about this episode, guys. Michael very much appears in this episode.
Woo!
Yeah, big one. This week's column question comes from the episode itself. Did Walt ever appear in a place he wasn't supposed to be?
And was he wet at the time?
And was he wet? Like,
oh, that's what you guys are talking about? Not in the computer?
What we, you know, we talk about
1 to 10, like, how soggy was Walt?
We talk about moments that sort of stick out of like, oh, I remember this from my first time through. But the series of questions that Ms. Clue, asks Michael in the flashback about Walt always has stuck out to me as like, wait, what the hell's going on in this show? Like, what? How do they know about what, you know, anyway, the mysteries of Walt, I guess.
Why does it matter if he started talking like early or late?
Yeah, exactly. What is any of this relevant? I forgot
her name was Mrs. Clue.
Mm-hmm. So bad.
When this started, I'm like, oh, Miss Clue, that's weird. And I like looked it up online to be like, I don't remember like this Miss Clue. And that's because every time I see her in like when I'm rereading Lostpedia or any of the books, I forget that it's spelled K-L-U-G-H.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure my mind just reads it Clug and I move on. And that's why Clue has never stayed in my mind. So yeah. Everybody who has their name read later on this episode, be thankful your last name isn't Clug or Clue, because I would never get there. Yeah, so we get a lot of answers this week. I feel like this is a good episode of Lost for answers, whether or not to our most pressing questions. I still think we get some answers. And as well as some, like, other tinier mysteries, I think this might be the first time in the past couple weeks of Lost where the main mystery really is as interesting as the show thinks it is. And the side, stories are also like tiny little mysteries. It's a very much penultimate, leading up into the finale episode. But that being said, it does sort of seem like we're done with drug addict Charlie being tempted. Is that the only thing this episode closes off besides the long deaths of Libby and Ana Lucia?
What an interesting question. I think so.
I mean, the show definitely wants us to feel like Charlie has reached some closure. Although it's very weird. The whole Echo just sort of randomly giving up the church thing is always strange. But, yeah. You know, he has found the higher purpose of the button, as John did.
Yeah, it feels very like, want to build an army? Never mind. Want to build a church? Never mind. We're not doing that.
Maybe Mr. Echo just has like ADHD. And needs to be medicated.
But at least Charlie's reaction was incredibly on brand, which is just like, but what am I supposed to right? do?
Usually someone leads me around. I'm Charlie.
But I did like, I genuinely like felt emotional and happy for Charlie as he's throwing, the statues into the water. And I like that John witnessed it without like Charlie knowing it. So there was like a witness to him doing that who like he didn't have to like, he didn't like show them, just happened that way. I really liked that. That being said, follow up question. Would you rather have a grubby other shove a hypodermic needle in you and draw blood, or inject your baby with some mystery vaccine that you found that was found in the jungle?
That Charlie used on himself first?
Right, that Charlie used
on himself. So I don't really know how pneumatic or hypodermic, whatever the automatic ejecting needles are, but they're not like spitting out spare needles.
Nor do Claire and Charlie.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think if there's anything,
seems like a infected needle.
Yeah, if there's anything 2020 has taught me as a year, it's that neither one of these is a good idea. Germs are everywhere.
While we're on stuff that we didn't like about the episode that's around Charlie, I think it's a real low move to have Vincent bring the heroin. Just in terms of the show.
Extremely unfair to Vincent.
Vincent's done nothing wrong this entire time. And
he's
even
just trying to get to the chips.
Yeah, even somebody that's arguing that Locke might be a secret antagonist, maybe against his will, I'm saying, like, it's a low blow for the showrunners to be like, maybe the goodest boy brings him the heroin.
Oh, no, are we going to have to start doing a Vincent antagonist check-in?
Well,
Vincent the evil force
of light? I feel like it makes sense because the heroin was, like, under the floor, like, under the guns, and they dug up the guns so that the heroin wore to the surface, and then good boy Vincent just wanted a game of fetch. And did you see how his tail was going when he's like, look what I brought you. I'm so good. Play with me. Charlie's like, no.
Don't you know that's heroin?
Vincent knew that underneath the heroin was the food.
Oh.
You know, and all of this is, I think this is the most we've seen Sawyer sort of spend apart from his stash. Especially since we learned where his stash was, which wasn't that long ago. But, like, he's always kind of around his tent. But now he's really, you know, he's really knocked off his game by this Ana Lucia thing. Because, you know, as he reminds us, they screwed that one time.
They screwed. Screwed her.
In a way that only Sawyer can.
Caught in a net, thanks so much.
I caught it in a net with her. Like that. Rolls off the tongue.
Uh-huh.
Also, weird things about it.
I think
they have a lot of forward propulsion.
Yeah, we should not just gloss over the fact that Jack does not correct him when Sawyer implies that that's what being caught in a net means. Like, Jack could have been like, oh no, we were just caught, we were just like literally in the net and then we fell out. But he's, you know, he's playing the game too, I think, a little bit, right?
I've played that game. I was 17.
I'm just
going to
let you think that happened.
All right, 17-year-old Dave, I'll take it. Fine.
What, just being like, I'm not going to confirm or deny that I am cool enough to have sex with Kate is a very 17-year-old boy move.
Yeah, sure.
But I like the pacing of this episode because it works around sort of the past few episodes I've had some trouble with the show's, like, internal logic sometimes serving up these, like, grander stories. And this time it sets itself up for having a weird problem because we're, like, on the beach and we're trying to set an entire episode between them knowing that they have to go hunt the others, but then also they can't go this episode because that's what we gotta do our finale for. So this is like a funeral while Michael also is executing a plan. And it feels like weird moments, like Jack has to keep reminding us how Echo and Locke are gone and how they never came back and how it's been a night. And then Charlie has to remind us how Echo got up off the beach and now has only come back the thing. There seems to be a lot of moments to try to place people in locations where they would get information or not have information in order to place them. And so the episode kind of does a little bit of the work that it's trying to show Michael doing, which is convincing his list people over. So that being said, I don't think the, like, final hit of the episode that, you know, he finally got Hurley on the team really plays as Michael being, this grand chess master. But because they're doling out IV drips worth of tiny answers that we've been looking for anyway, I kind of don't notice. The more Lost operates like this, the more I feel like when we were going into season two, my memory of season two was I love season two because of all the crazy lore that's in it. Whether or not I feel like that after we get to the end of the show and have some of these questions answered or elaborated on is something we'll save for the storm. But what I like about season two for You Call Me's is just how dense it is with stuff. And how even when, like our review said, I'm the kind of person that, you know, rather than take off my tinfoil hat, I don the tinfoil the rest of the stuff. And it seems like that's what the writers of season two of Lost are doing. And when it works, I think it works really well. But I think that also is dependent on the show paying off some of these things later on. Within the season, I think the pacing is really, really good. Once we have like those two or three episodes of the Tailies, joining our main survivor, like the end of the season, I think finds up a great way to ramp with like Henry, Locke's, challenge of faith, the whole Sawyer, Kate, Jack love triangle that is manufactured and represented by guns. It all works for me, even if maybe the logic of it doesn't work for me as well as the first season. Did anybody else have a problem with that with this episode? Or like maybe even little facts like when we saw Michael leave in the hunting party and Locke found all those shells, maybe Michael was shot. They were in a forested region where here it takes place in a field. Like none of those things. Everybody was just, nope. He didn't bother you?
Nope.
Didn't even notice.
Nope.
If I'm honest. I mean,
I think that makes my argument.
Well, and that's the other thing is like once Lost gets going, and I think we saw this in season one, like once you get down the home stretch, it's very, very fast and sort of furiously coming at you with more mystery, more little mysteries, more big mysteries. And it's always kind of hard to decide what is. You know, useful to remember what's not unless you've seen the whole thing. And I think that's part of the way the show keeps the viewer from knowing the things that it doesn't want it to know yet. Is by being slightly disorienting, especially down the home stretch. But it's also super fun because it's like riding a really fast freight train of mystery. So,
yeah.
It's like
a jungle freight train of mystery.
You know, the end of this episode is a really good example. Like we had, as you said, like a really good, well-connected flashback present day scenario where they're playing with their format a little bit. And then everything feels like it's wrapped up. Michael's plan feels wrapped up. And then it's like, oh, hey, remember, there's more mysteries. There's a boat.
Boat?
Yep. Boat?
Horse?
Yep. So, I think that that's just, it's just fantastic. I really love the end of season two here. Mm-hmm. It's not a spoiler to say that this finale is also pretty good.
I mean, it's a little frustrating. I mean, I think they do Michael a little dirty in all this because like Miss Clue says is, I really hate calling her Miss Clue. All that lady says is, you got to, you gotta bleep that. You have to bring our guy back. And, you know, and these people, she doesn't say anything about killing Ana Lucia. That's Michael's, like, it's just Michael's plan, right?
Right.
Like, so.
Michael improvised the murders.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is she's like, they'll be so mad they won't ask any questions about this. And I'm like, why would they be mad in this scenario you're laying out?
I mean, I feel like she assumes that they have not forgotten about Walt.
Bleep that again, too. I'm not really.
No, she assumes that they forgot about Walt, she assumes that they did not forget about Walt, whereas we know the truth, which is most of them have forgotten about Walt.
So you think it's entirely Walt-based? You don't think she's
You would
like,
think so, right? Like, why else would she assume that they're going to be mad?
I mean, thus far, our two societies on the island have been very diplomatic with prisoner exchange. Like, they're like, oh, maybe we could trade something. Oh, well, if you get our guy back, then we'll give you this. And they're like, it's interesting because I think the others of, you know, season one, the jungle creeps or whatnot, were like much more savage. Whereas these people are like in yurts, but also capable of pretending of not being in yurt people. Like, there's sophisticated language with unsophisticated methods. So it reads weird.
Also, if they have a boat, why do they still live on this island?
Yeah, maybe it's
stuff that, you know?
I have a lot of questions.
Is that all what we're going to look like after quarantine anyway? We're just going to look like a bunch of others because we've just given up societal rules?
For sure.
Yurtville people. That being said, listen, they seem to dress in comfortable linens, so that's nice. They have a very lax beard policy. But
it
we
appears
know the
as if they
fake,
all live so. Where they work, so they're all working from relatively home.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny because like he walks into Yurtville and you're like, why does this place with its actual like structures look shittier than the beach camp.
Then that super nice kitchen situation that Saeed just built.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, yeah, the beach galley is like, is really nice. But yeah, like, I think it's just because everything is brown. Like, I need the pop blue of the ocean, and I need some of the bright shirts that the Losties wear.
Right. We need somebody in a rugby shirt.
Yeah. Someone in a peach.
They have the worst hatch
button down.
With the rectangle.
Exactly.
So yeah. The most boring hatch.
The most boring hatch. What's the rectangle hatch?
It's just a hatch that has a rectangle that says Dharma in the center. As far as we know, that's the hatch's name. The other one, the one that was called the Arrow, had an arrow on it, and the Swan had a swan on it. So I'm assuming this is the rectangle hatch.
Oh, the rectangle hatch.
This is the hatch without an. It's the TBD hatch.
The TBD
these hatch. Are the these are the TBD people. This is their TBD camp.
It's pronounced TV.
We did get to meet re-meet another that seems kind of nice.
Yeah.
Alex. We get to put a name to Alex's face for 100% certain this time. And she cares about Claire.
Yeah, connect her back to Claire, stuff like that. So.
Yeah, and then who was our other's name? Pickens?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Pickens.
I think it is Pickens.
He's the guy who's peeing when Michael happens across him. So we got Pickens, Mr. Friendly, which is not his given name, but it's what we're calling him because he's so friendly. Clue, which is the given name. And Alex, which seems like a very normal name
and
compared
Henry.
To all the other names. Oh, and Henry. Well,
right. Well, quote unquote.
Henry.
They stole that name from a poor black ballooning man.
Balloonist? Is that what they're called?
Balloonist, yes.
I believe they're called aeronauts. Oh, Eddie Redmayne made a whole movie about it.
Of course Eddie Redmayne did.
I mean, like, genuinely he did.
But yeah, there's a lot in this episode, and it is, I think, one of the longer episodes of this series, that isn't like one of the special supersized episodes, but there's a lot of retracing, in order to give context. Let me ask you guys, as people who, you know, watched Lost and are now rewatching Lost, how excessive is how much of the hunting party is in this episode? Considering we are binging this show.
Oh, it's not. I like seeing it. It's like, by the hunting party, you mean the, like, light them up sort of thing, right?
Yep, the light them up, or Michael knocking out Locke, or Michael at the computer before
the, like,
Jack checks.
The previously on, the beginning of the episode is like, a little much, but it's sort of establishing this unusual flashback structure they have this season. So I'm not that worried about it. And then the light 'em up stuff, it reminds me of the play, Noises Off, or the movie Noises Off. You've seen that where you get to, like, I just like seeing scenes from another, perspective. So this is like the backstage, of that production that Mr. Friendly was putting on. And, I really like that. And I like Alex and everything that she's doing in that scene. So I'm not
mad. So you think it'd be weird if we saw Michael's part of it, but didn't see the stuff that we had actually seen before? Like, if just bagged Kate comes in, Alex talks to Michael, they come back with some guns.
But I mean, we're binging it, but week to week, people watching network TV are not. So they need
right.
That,
well,
I
mean, the only reason that I thought about this week and instead of any other week, one, it's a flashback episode within its own island. But two, I noticed this week that Westworld is just like, we don't even need dialogue in our previously ons anymore. There's just like a pulse of like, remember this guy? Remember this guy? Remember this girl? All right, we're in. And I'm man, television
has
changed.
Out for them.
Well, I mean, fine, because they have a simpler story. But I just wondered if, you know, television wouldn't go back and do as much. Oh, no, you're probably right. Because
I'm not sure it is working out. I mean, Westworld is notoriously too abstract for people to follow it. So I don't think we should be taking any lessons from how Westworld
I think
runs
it's more stuff. Of a, you know, it's more about the delivery when the delivery frequency of the show when it is created.
Yeah.
I think if they were making Lost for Netflix, say right now, or Disney Plus, they probably would take that stuff out because you're binging through it. So you're probably hitting it a lot more quickly. You know, we're a couple weeks removed from watching The Hunting Party. And so were people at the time. And the other thing that's easy to forget, or at least I feel like I forget it a lot, is how little we really know about the others. You know, as the audience in, even at the end of season two, we still really don't know, like, what their deal is. Like, it doesn't even seem like everybody in the camp has fully realized the idea that they are not all dirty, you know, like that doesn't even seem to have gotten around. So I feel like in this episode, it works because at this point in the show, any information about the others is deeply fascinating. Like it could be, if you were watching this in 2006, the others could be anything still, you know, it's crazy. Yeah. It's wild. And I think that they use that to great effect in this episode.
I think there's some great stuff in here that, you know, whether or not we could end up trusting it as the episode's playing out, it's throwing back to ideas they built in early on in the season. You know, Michael's given a list, much like, you know, Goodwin had a list, much like Henry was sent to get Locke specifically, so he says. So we see, like, that point of the culture. They ask if Walt hasn't been anywhere he's supposed to be. Walt says they're playing, which sort of lines up with, like, a lot of the stuff that Kate found in the disused medical hatch. And then they reintroduce the idea of the vaccine by having, like, Charlie pull it off the pallet, which happened a couple weeks ago, but for us, it was like a day ago for them. But, you know, reintroducing that idea at the same time that the others are, like, taking blood from Michael. I really like the churn this episode has of kicking up some stuff all through the season as we head to the penultimate way. But you're right, Neil. Yeah. It's that the second he walks into that camp, or no, I think it's the second Friendly says we're here and he looks up and he sees that rock with the hole in it that Electro Walt described. And then it's like everything from there on out in Yurtville, even if it's contradictory information, you're so focused on it, you don't even notice that the titular 3 minutes is only a minute and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
I do want to say really quickly to go back to the hunting party, thing. The hunting party aired January 18th and this episode aired May 17th. So it's been over 100 days, you know, like over 3 months between those episodes for the person watching in 2006. So yeah, they need a refresher.
Yeah. And well, it definitely feels like we took a break from the show being focused on the others, other than having quote unquote Henry in our lives to deal with like camp drama. It's been very like hatch drama, beach drama for the last several episodes. And now the show is like, hey, by the way, you need to refocus your attention on what's going on elsewhere on this island because it's finale time, you know?
Yeah. People are dying now.
Right. Like it's about to get, we're about to come back. So pay attention to the others.
So. I just think it's, I don't know. It's interesting the way the funeral scene, I was watching the funeral scene and I'm like, how many funeral scenes can we watch on a show like this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a question, you know, and even Jack is like, well, here we are again, you know? And then I was really moved by Harley, like frustrated that Hurley's ends in like, so I'll go with you, Michael. And I'm like, no, don't go with Michael. He's being so squirrely. But I like that both Jack and Hurley's eulogies started with like the person's profession. Please, when you bury me, don't start with
Joanna Robinson was a podcaster.
No, don't.
And
do
here
it.
We gather because she's finally tightened it up. Rest in peace.
She strapped it down. She tightened it up all the way to
all.
Heaven.
It's all tight. All tight down here.
She never quite worked out the ums.
The wake will be in that bar over there.
My headstone just says, like, comma, Joanna Robinson. Like, Joanna Robinson. I do like how Kate is in this episode. I like defensive of other people, Kate. that's my favorite Kate mode, like when she's protecting Claire or, you know, whatever. And so in this episode, she's really protective of Hurley. And I like that because I feel like it carries a lot of weight when Kate's like, snap out of it. So yay. Yay for Kate.
Yeah.
Being there for Hurley, you know. How do we feel? Okay. So we talked about timelines a little bit, like in terms of like, it's been over 3 months since viewers in 2006 saw Hunting Party, but it has only been 9 days since Charlie stole Claire's baby. So how do we feel about them holding hands?
Listen, a lot can happen in 9 days.
You're right.
It's on this island. Yeah.
Yeah. He had a whole church project that he adopted and gave up on in that time period.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason I think it kind of works is A, because it's just holding hands, and B, because it eventually in the same episode leads to Charlie having a redemption for himself, which you pointed out, which is really important in terms of character arc.
I think it's in a different order. He throws away the heroin before he goes to the funeral, which I think is important for us as viewers to see.
Oh, you meant holding hands at the funeral. Sorry, I thought maybe they did at the end of the vaccine.
No.
In that case, even better, because that doesn't break like any sort of story logic. It does, you know, seem sort of weird that, yeah, Charlie stole her baby and now she's kind of okay with it, but she also went on a little mini adventure out into the jungle for this vaccine that he magically gives her. So I could see some sort of like, none of this is making sense to us. Maybe we need to bind back together sort of thing. I don't know. Stealing a baby though.
9 days. I give you, you're like, if you ever come and steal my baby, hell, if you ever come and steal my cat, you are at least, no, God, now that I made it real, I'm like, it's way longer. I was going to say 14 days at least, but now I'm like, no, it's like a year. It's a year, and that's just my fucking cat. It's a baby. Anyway, I like Charlie.
Dave wasn't on the podcast for season 3 because he stole Joanna's cat.
You wouldn't steal my cat.
To call her bluff.
You wouldn't steal my cat. You would just like release her into the wild. Wouldn't go well for her. I do like this, statue moment for Charlie. And his time with Echo has been good for my tolerance of Charlie, in terms of it was nice to have.
Well, it seems to have made the complete reversal from Dark Charlie, which is how we left Solo Charlie last time. So thankfully,
when
Saeed and Echo talked him out of it.
Yeah, remember, was it him and Saeed who were going to have the army, the counter army to the army?
Yes.
That was a pretty dark moment for Charlie.
Oh, then when Charlie assaulted Sun and never told anybody?
Yeah, pretty rough.
Remember how Charlie comes down into the hash and Echo is on his button kick? He's like, I am button, all about button, button life now. The button and I are one. He doesn't even like get up in the intervening 108 minutes. He's just sitting there. He can't even like go to a funeral. He's like, I will mourn them in my own way with the button.
By pushing this button.
Like, Charlie goes down there and he's like, oh, so you're about this button life now or whatever, right? And he's like, yeah. And before Charlie gets mad, he's like, oh, turning the hatch into a bachelor pad? I'm like, what are you talking about, Charlie? What is happening?
What does Charlie think a church is for?
Like, is he envisioning, like, Mr. Echo's just going to, like, hang out with some lava lamps and, like...
Mr. Echo's church and fuck pad.
Such a weird,
I would go
great
to that
stuff,
restaurant.
Charlie.
I would be interested in their literature. Yeah, so that's, you know,
yeah.
Those
also, Charlie's has what? To have met a priest before, right? Does he think Echo's not that? What kind of priest does he think he is? Priest don't
was
have
it a joke
pads,
about
right?
How he wasn't living with Charlie anymore? Was it more like a "you broke up with me" joke?
I think so. I think ultimately that's what it is. It's like Charlie's like, oh, you moved out of our house? Because he's like, go get my stuff. Move me out of our house and move me into here and then never talk
Charlie,
to me again.
Charlie, go get my stuff.
Yeah.
I'm done talking to you about your weird white person visions.
Whose idea was this stupid church anyway?
He doesn't have the
anyway.
Widest Christianity visions. Echo's visions are all like his brother, like smoke monsters, like he's dreaming he's in other people's bodies. Charlie's visions are like straight up painterly.
Lady Madonna.
Saintly women. Yeah. Anyway, that, you know, Christianity takes all stripes. Sometimes you just need to, push a button.
Sure.
I'm a little disappointed in Locke just giving up the button after one bad video, but I guess, you know, we could save that for next week where I'm sure it'll come up again.
I think that's it. Are we done with Locke and the button? He's done with the button.
He's done with the button.
Like emotionally, for sure.
My anger with Locke is not done. Yes.
Okay.
Just when I thought I was out.
My island anger is not done with Locke and that button. If you're going to make a huge push and kill somebody to get inside of a hatch to push a button, at least finish pushing that button. It seems like the easiest thing. Anyway, I'm a little annoyed.
Yeah, Boone. I think Boone would be very disappointed if he were still around.
And it's like weird this episode because, you know, Echo comes in and pushes the button, which is fine. But at the time, Jack doesn't know where he is, which means Jack has just been like, we've got other issues. We've got to bury two people. Who cares if this button thing happens? Surely John will come back. And so, like, the whole button schedule's gone out the window. I'm very concerned. Button concerned.
I think that Echo has it handled. Thank you very much. And I think it's a cool moment when Locke just, like, cuts his splint off and is like, enough now, enough. And Dido plays as he walks away from his grave.
Fair.
Tighten up. All right. Anything
else? Yeah, we ready to do some corners?
Let's do it. Let's tighten up and do some corners.
There is a new Giacchino theme in this episode. It is a derivation of the Others theme, but I can't tell you its name yet.
God.
Because it is named after a thing or person or incident that has not happened or we've met or has occurred yet. We'll get there.
Wow.
Giacchino's just dropping spoilers in the score.
Although if you think about it, it wouldn't be a spoiler if we told it to you right now, unless someone said, hey, this is a spoiler. That's my thing. It's like, if you just saw it on a track listing before the season, no idea what that is.
I wonder if it was called that. I'm looking at what it's called. I wonder if it was called that. Or if it's just like retroactively people are like, oh, that was that thing.
Or if it was just called the Others theme.
Yeah, right. The Other Others theme.
The Other Others theme.
Well, that's probably what it was called, the Other Others theme. And then someone's like, settle down, Giacchino. He's like, all right.
Oh, right. That's a really good Giacchino.
Blake theme.
Okay. I have an impromptu, corner to crash into this funeral.
Oh. Mm-hmm. All
right. Right before we started recording, I asked our Slackies, the commies in the Slack to guess what was in the boat. So Victoria says, Victoria says Dharma Ranch.
Nice.
Tori says Dharma Dog Treats for Vincent. And that's about as close as we get to a serious answer. There's some questions about, like, could Walt be in the boat? Like, would they be sending Walt? You know, because, like, Michael's like, I want the boat, right? Like,
right.
So could they be sending
this
Walt
is
in the
boat? Slightly different boat.
Right.
I always assumed it was dead bodies.
Hmm.
Back in the day. I was like, oh, cool, boat with dead bodies. I watched too many movies.
This is how the zombie season starts.
Right. This is how zombies come to Lost.
I think I assumed it was like a new castaway.
Okay. Like a totally fresh, we'd never meet them before.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's
like a Michelle Rodriguez is gone, but Vin Diesel is watching the show.
It's Paul Walker.
Okay, looking from a family.
I had a plumber.
It's Paul Walker and Vin Diesel in the boat.
Guys, I had a plumbing disaster in my house last week where our laundry water was coming up through the shower downstairs. Anyway, it was the whole thing. The plumbing in this house has been a disaster for years. And my plumber was named Paul Walker. His company is called like Paul Walker and Sons. And I was like, oh, family. Anyway.
When he left, were you like, drive safe?
He's this like grizzled elderly black man. It was great. I was like, thanks, Paul Walker. Also, I went to shake one of Paul Walker's son's hands and he's like, I don't think so. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot what it was like to interact with humans during a pandemic. I see only grocery store clerks. I apologize. Okay. Yeah. So what's in the boat? If anyone else has any call me ideas, you can email them in or drop them the Slack or something like that. Spoiler alert. We will find out very soon what's in the boat. So
what's in the boat?
What's in the boat?
Neil, what's our jungle of mystery moment?
Oh, it's definitely when Walt screams. Sort of, well, he sort of like yelps it at Michael, where he's like, they're not who they say they are. They're pretending. What the hell does that mean? Well,
yeah,
we know
pretending
what that
means. To be what? Nothing even makes sense to be pretending about.
Yeah.
They're pretending to make no sense.
It's always, so it's like, it's one thing for Kate to find a closet where there are costumes. It's a whole nother thing for like Walt to have been with these people since we last saw Walt, and for Walt to be like, yo, this is messed up. They are not on the level. That is a great mystery. What does Walt know?
And also so specific, they're pretending and not like they're lying or anything like that. It's like something's all.
The quick runner up is the other thing he says, which is they make me take tests, which implies that they're studying Walt, which I mean, if you had seen the bird scene that we all saw in season one, you also would be studying Walt.
It's like they've been watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if anybody had that.
I wonder if they have cable in TBD Village.
Yeah. That's a big meta leap, but surely at some point during the run of Lost, somebody had the dumb idea that the others were actually watching the show. Come on. We could have spent 6 years assuming that they were maybe in purgatory. Maybe it's that. The Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award, I guess, defaults to Michael, as far as I could tell, he's the only one who falls down in the episode, while being chased or through exhaustion. Just default Michael. I don't know if we have to award that, but it's better than awarding nobody.
You could say that Michael also emotionally falls down several times.
Yes. And maybe, like, yeah, his fortitude takes a falling score. The Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie, award also goes to Michael, who says, hey, I know what I saw. We take too many people to hear us coming. I'm not taking a damn army across the island, Jack.
Which you could have just said literally everything Michael says in this episode. Or like everything
I looked
Michael
at
says
a lot of it. But the thing is that a lot of it is just what we know about versus what's in the background. The stuff that he says is like, hey, you can't go. Or like, hey, do you have a son, Jack? And I'm like, well, that's not a lie. Jack doesn't have a son. He's being accusatory. But yes, everything Michael says, Michael, now that Henry Gale has exited the show for a brief period of time, Michael's come right in and take his place. And it's just
King
spouting
liar.
Lies. King lies.
I gotta say, I don't think we mentioned it, in our general discussion. I think my favorite moments episode is actually when Saeed's like, I think Michael's been turned, and you're like, thank God somebody
somebody noticed.
Thank God somebody noticed this totally obvious thing that Michael's being super weird.
Well, I also like that Saeed is like so chill when Saeed, like, first of all, Michael comes up to him in a snit and he's like, blah, 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 blah. And Saeed's like, welcome back, Michael, you know, like super calm. And then Michael's just like being his like, obviously lying self, and so he's like, yes, I understand. Yes, of course. Yes, yes. Later, Jack, he's lying. lying. And I love
he has to
when
figure
people
out how to turn his advantage.
I love when people lie to Saeed and he knows it, which is most of the time. We talked about some instances in season one where people got the drop on Saeed, but mostly, most of the time, Saeed knows when you're lying. And this is a really fun example. I also like, I'm going to call this moderate progress for Sawyer, who you may remember was probably the most racist person on the island towards Saeed in season one. But, in this episode's like, I want the red beret to come with us. Saeed comes with us, yes,
yeah,
when we go face the Batman. But then he like loses some points for calling him Captain Arab. So, you know,
it's a real mixed bag with Sawyer.
Sawyer.
Yeah. There's a little tift on the Lostopedia wiki where they're like, Captain Arab might be in reference to this Bob Dylan song. And I'm like, nope, it is not.
That is definitely not
Captain Ahab and the racial epithet. But, you know, Sawyer, he does the best as he can to not be racist. And as Joanna points out, he gets better.
It only gets better.
It only gets better. We just have to go, oh, screwed and more bad nicknames. Not great, Sawyer, but he'll come back around.
Well, so, you know, like, Sawyer's gonna Sawyer.
At least he cares that Ana Lucia's dead. Sorry, I just put the bar all the way on the ground for the problematic white man. At least he cares that the last woman he had sex with is dead.
Really and makes you feel alive.
And he's right that Saeed should probably come on the mission. He's
that true.
He is the voice soldier.
He's the one that's like, oh yeah, Kate and Hurley. What could go wrong with this intrepid group of warriors? Actually, Kate's fine.
What happened the last time Jack and Kate and Hurley all went into the jungle together? Someone got blown up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Wait, can we keep an eye on this? I can if I think about it, but I'm going to choose not to remember it too hard and be like, if Jack and Hurley and Kate are on a mission together into the jungle, it's probably a season finale time.
Like, what are their, so they do this in like basketball and hockey, like what's their line rating? So it's like, all right, what, when these three guys are on the ice, what, how well do they score? Someone is probably going to create a spreadsheet for this, if we will it into existence, where it's like, all right, who's on the away team and does anyone explode?
Yeah.
It's good. Good thing to look out for.
Yeah. I think you can make a pretty good argument. Maybe not all of those characters, but I think you'd make a pretty good argument for if Kate and Hurley are on the same expedition.
Yeah.
Sure.
We're having a good time A-team expedition on that one.
Yeah. Cause like Kate and Jack go into the jungle all the time. And actually Hurley has expeditions into the jungle, but usually it's with like fun people. You know what I mean? Like fun, mm-hmm. like
or
fun,
it's with
odd
people who
or
need to be more fun.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
like, oh, Sawyer sucked the last couple of weeks. So let's put him with Hurley to chase a frog.
But yeah, maybe Hurley and Kate, Hurley plus Kate is the magic combination for season finale.
All right.
Oh, gotta get Hurley and Kate in the same place. Joanna, it's time for our Jungle of History moment. Where did we land last week?
Ooh, okay. So last week's results, Dream Yemi and Dream Lock. I don't remember who came up with that one.
Me. That's me.
Got 7.7%. Reminder that you can vote on our Twitter account, at Storm Podcast. Is that our Twitter mm-hmm. handle?
That, yes, that's yes. the one. That's
yeah,
the one.
Yeah. And then my nominees, Snug Buds, Echo and Charlie, 25% of the vote. Michael and the Computer.
This one was mine. Yeah.
28.9% of the vote, but the
very surprising turnout for Michael and the Computer.
But the clear winner is Lock and Echo with 38% of the vote. Mm-hmm. So let's go through our nominees this week. I am going to put my two nominees back into the pile. I'm doing Charlie and Echo round two.
Should it be Charlie and Echo in the button?
In their bachelor pad. In Charlie's like dream bachelor pad, Charlie and Echo. So Charlie and Echo are my nominees this week. Neil, who do you got?
Well, in honor of them being recently named the best away team. Also because sometimes grief, you know, if you're really sad, sometimes all you want to do is make out. I'm going with Kate and Hurley.
Love it.
Yeah. Right there.
There's
at the end.
Nothing more romantic than leaning into the other person's grave they're digging to give them a kiss. Not that you shouldn't vote for Neil, just I'm saying.
It's like it's just a bridge between two graves.
just a little bridge kiss. I'm gonna pick yeah. Jin and Michael, because did you see how happy Jin was to see that Michael was alive and safe?
He was so happy. All right, and then our listener Steph came through with Saeed and Jack in that whispered, what are we going to do about it?
A little scheme session at the end.
I don't know, but we got a whole night to figure.
Oh, they're watching us. Quick, kiss me.
Saeed and Jack. So there you go. That's our Jungle Kissery. That poll will be up on our Twitter account later this week. Y'all can vote and rectify the injustice that was the snubbing of Charlie and Echo in round one last week.
No books this week, so no book club. Our reoccurring Where's Libby segment. Unfortunately, we know in the current timeline she's in the ground. But Where's Libby is about Where's Libby in the flashbacks. Neil, where's Libby?
She's still getting the blankets. Actually, it's kind of dark because Libby also in this episode gets shot in the previously on. So she has a really rough week for her.
And then played by an extra or a stuffed body in a sheet for the rest of the
Oh, right. Yeah. She's in her grave.
In the grave. All right, it's time for the official podcast check-in. Neil, you want to be Damon Lindelof again?
Always.
And I will be Carlton Cuse. Here we go. Podcast question, says Carlton Cuse. How do you write? Gentlemen, I thoroughly enjoy your show. I cannot imagine what it's like to sit around a table with the writers and discuss what will happen on the show, which leads to my question. Do you work with the general outline of what's going to happen for the entire season, or do you write as you go? I know many writers subscribe to one of the other camps. Thank you for considering my question.
You know, the very...
And I think you could sing. Oh no, it doesn't actually say that in there.
I'm not singing, though. Despite your best efforts to get me to try. We plan out the seasons one at a time, but in the context of a much larger plan. So as Carlton mentioned last week, so for season 3, for example, we've been working on the past 3 weeks about what the plan is. We put these sort of tent poles over the course of, say, episode 7. We want to be here. And by episode 15, we want to be here. So we know sort of exactly what we're working toward. And in the case of this year, even though you haven't seen the finale yet, we pretty much shot the exact finale we talked about shooting almost a year ago.
In the mini camp, I mean, it was amazing. We got sometimes you get off course and you get detoured. You have to sort of move story up because you realize you don't have enough story. The estimation of how long it takes to tell a story changes, but this year it worked out pretty much right on the money.
And there are episodes in there where, you know, for example, we didn't know we were going to do a Rose and Bernard episode this season. I mean, we knew they were going to be reunited, but since we hadn't even cast Bernard yet at the time of, you just never know how it's going to work out. But then, when we saw all those actors working together, we knew what their backstories were. So we said, hey, let's tell that story. We ended up doing an entire, we did SOS. Yeah, that sort of stuff.
Instead of the episode where we told the audience what the monster was and where the island is and what the numbers meant. Yeah, we had to push that one off.
We pushed it off to season 9, in fact, where it sits waiting to get shot.
Exactly.
So that's the short answer.
That's, end scene.
That's really fun. I just want to give a recommendation to our listeners if they like that kind of process stuff. Because what Damon Lindelof is describing there in terms of like we have a goal post at episode 7 and one at episode 15. Mm-hmm. TV writers refer to that as breaking the season. Like you break the season in terms of like the major things you want to have happen and then you break an episode sort of thing. There's a great podcast called The Nerdist Writers Panel. With, I think it's Ben Blacker, not Ben Acker, Ben Blacker. And that is where I learn almost everything I know about TV writing is from listening to those podcasts. He gets great, you know, he'll get writers from all your favorite shows, showrunners, and they'll talk about their process. And it's really, really fascinating. So if you're interested in how all that works, that's a good resource for you.
Nice.
Excellent. I think that does it for the calm this week, so we will transition into the storm of spoilers right after this.
Now is the time on the podcast where we love to thank our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above. As we mentioned early in the episode, we like to do live watches with our listeners this weekend, this upcoming weekend. We are watching that thing, not that thing you do. Can't hardly wait. Another Ethan Embry joint. Can't hardly wait. That classic 90s party movie, with our listeners in our movie club that we do monthly watches with. We are also, for all our patrons, we haven't mentioned this yet, but for all our patrons, we are doing a live watch of the season, the two-part season two finale, this weekend, Sunday, in our Slack. So, join our Patreon. Anyway, I would like to thank Timothy May, who's a new subscriber, Andrew Nikovich, a new subscriber, Fran Bull, a new subscriber, and Sam, and Kendall Abernathy, and Thomas Hankins, and Tony Rollins, and Anna Jackson, and Will Nazer, and Taylor Hughes, and T. Legia, and Alyssa Love, or Alisa maybe, Savio Nguyen, Georgia O'Brien, Eleanor Corkish, Alejandro Villarreal, Rachel Aluli, Cassidy, Leah Rock, and and Nicholas Eng. These are all familiar names to me. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to thank Elizabeth Hines, Nikki Jones, Brian Moon, Brett Gordon, Simon, Renee Kolbnyen, Liz Gonzalez, Hi Mom, Deanna, Jeffrey Post, Sarah Boosman, Marcus Massiarelli, Samba Mateba, Greg Jagger, Nathan Bodnar, Stephanie Hoffman, Lawrence Aggleton, Jeff Ziegler, Connor Mupich, Amy H., and Kate Diligent. Thank you very much.
And fun fact about me, I would like to thank the following humans. Sean Duane, Stacy Taxon, Debbie DeNice, Randy Elaine, Jen, Rich Lyman, Moira Burke, Rachel Matusik, Jeff Cooper, Stephen Fusco, Angela Flunker, Christopher Holmquist, Alicia Gressla, Elliot Goldbaum, Dharma Jess, Darth Vicious, Logan Wagner, Kevin Mullaney, Carol Blaine, and Monica Rickman. Thank you all very much for being part of the small council.
We're back for the Ben Storm. That's right. One of the bleeps, at least one of the bleeps you heard on this week's episode, was somebody saying Ben, and Ben's theme was the Giacchino order. Corner for this week.
We're almost Ben. There. We're so close. Oh, I really lost it this week. I'm sorry.
We only have to make it till this weekend, right? Somebody says Ben in the finale.
Do they?
Right?
Do we have to wait the season three premiere? But I feel like we can just freaking call, once we know, like, how important he is, which is what we find out in the finale, then his name doesn't really matter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
once we realize that he is the he.
Yeah.
Well, now we're just debating on whether we take one more week calling him quote unquote Henry or not. Right?
Well, the show might have taken a whole year, which is wild.
Yes, but, that is insane.
For us, it's only going to last a week.
Okay, so let me backtrack for some stuff for people who might be joining us in the storm, this is your first time watching. Interesting way to do it. I definitely approve, but our reviewer reminded us that happens. So, Henry Gale turns out to be Ben, but more importantly, I was hoping you guys could help me track what we know about the vaccine, because it does come into play on and off, but is definitely not as important as it is this week and is going to appear to be next week. What do you guys remember about the vaccine?
There's a whole stub for it on Wikipedia.
Well, I could look at that, or I could just see what you guys remember, I suppose.
The vaccine. It appears the vaccine was originally manufactured by the Dharma Initiative, though the kit found on the pallet drop appears to suggest some party was continuing to manufacture the vaccine after the time of the purge. I mean, I guess this is a good question. Who's like, cause it's definitely not those guys who are boxing up the food, at the end, at the very end of Lost. We find out that's two guys in a warehouse somewhere loading that pallet.
Yeah. I think it's on the DVD's special features.
Yeah. As described by Kelvin, the vaccine was intended to combat some sort of sickness on the island, though he never elaborated on the nature of the disease or its symptoms. Kelvin indicated that Desmond should give himself a shot of the vaccine every 9 days, and that anyone going outside the station without protection would be at risk of contracting it.
Yeah, I feel like
so
the,
definitely,
the,
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I've always felt like the disease is something they either gave up on or was always sort of designed to be what felt like a random MacGuffin, where it's like the, you know, it could have been part of the psychological experiment of the Swan Station, which, because we get this whole situation where Kelvin is explaining it to Desmond, right? And he's like, this is why you have to go out in a hazmat suit. We have to take this vaccine. Like, but we also, the Swan Station may have been a psychological experiment to a certain extent. I mean, we know that the hatch does eventually physically have something happen to it, in that it explodes or implodes. I think it implodes, right? Like it becomes smaller.
I think so.
It implodes in on itself instead of blowing up.
It's like, and blows.
But then there's a tie to, Rousseau, right? Cause Rousseau thinks that her guys got the sickness, her team got the sickness, and the vaccine would have prevented it. But I don't know if that's ever necessarily proven. We've talked about this before too, right? Did we ever come to a conclusion on whether or not the sickness is real?
I don't think they make the sickness. The thing that's frustrating, sorry, once again to our new listeners, but the thing about that's frustrating about watching the final season for me is that the sickness appears to hit people in different ways. The way it hits Claire and the way it hits Saeed.
Oh, right. Cause Saeed gets it at the end.
Yeah. And the circumstances under which, you know, like Saeed is the most information we get on the sickness in terms of he describes how he like doesn't feel anything and all this sort of stuff. Like that he's infected by the black smoke. It sort of seems to be the infection that it is. So he, you know, he doesn't feel anything, but he still needs a motivation. Like the smoke monster has to promise him he'll see Nadia again. And then he has like his redemption at the end. Meanwhile, the implication is that Claire is like, maybe on some kind of path to recovery. Maybe that's helped by the fact that smoke monster is like vanquished, but like it's not consistent enough to me to believe that they really fully got their ducks in a row on that.
Sure.
On that idea.
It's certainly not believable that the vaccine did anything.
No, but like that might just be more of those like mind games, you know what
sure
I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because a lot of the information we have about the vaccine is from Kelvin, who's not a reliable narrator in any way whatsoever.
Or Ethan, who's also super unreliable.
Right. I do want to read something from this vaccine page on Lostpedia that might be of particular interest to Dave. Because it involves the Lost experience. In the Sri Lanka video, part of which was a videotape of a private meeting taken by Rachel Blake and Thomas Middlevark, who cares, explained to volunteers that
those are characters in The Lost Experience. How dare you?
Explained to volunteers that two villages in Sri Lanka had been intentionally infected with a Hanzo-engineered virus and that the Hanzo Foundation's cover story was to provide a treatment vaccine. He explained the villagers thought they were infected by a virus carried by local macaws. I think that's what that word is. And they believed that the Hanzo workers were bringing them the cure. In fact, Middlework revealed that their goals were a mortality rate of exactly 30%, as well as testing of the deceased to confirm the genetic targets of their virus. Middlework implied that this was tied to saving the world and that these experiments were being done to perfect this vaccine. So, the Hanzo Foundation was doing...
So it's like some Planet of the Apes shit.
Biological warfare in Sri Lanka. Some like culling, a 30% culling of the planet, maybe to ease population stress or something like that. Anyway, that's just all like ARG stuff, but,
I chose not to cite part of the official podcast this week where they pretend the ARG is real. And they're like, we got a call from somebody representing this Hanzo Foundation. We just thought we could use a Scandinavian country without any consequences, but it turns out they're a little mad. And I'm like, oh my God, guys, settle down.
They were really, really high on their own supply in the proverbial sense in season 2.
I like the idea of the Hanzo Foundation making a population control drug for two reasons. One, super nerdy reason, in case, you don't want to do the Lost Experience or, get any further into the numbers, past this season of Lost, because Lost certainly isn't interested in it. You should know that the numbers actually are, like different variables in an equation that's supposed to predict the end of the world, and the Dharma Initiative's job is to try to change those variables. So changing the population by a specific amount might change one of those variables. Two, what I like about it is I like the idea of the Dharma Initiative and the Hanzo Foundation setting up a situation where everybody gets these shots, and then they could just kind of decide when they want to experiment with somebody. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but we also see some stuff like getting shots getting administered when people first join the Dharma Initiative can come off island, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that you like are indoctrinated in the society where you're just injecting yourself with something and then they can decide whether or not they put anything in there or if it's just a psychological experiment does kind of track more with the Dharma Initiative, because I don't know, again, I'm learning a lot more about vaccines currently than I knew before, and I still don't know much about it. But I don't think there's a vaccine that you have to repeatedly keep injecting yourself with. Like, the whole point of a vaccine is you introduce antibodies that your body can then copy. So you might need a couple rounds of it or something, but there isn't like a vaccine where it's like, well, now I just gotta, every time I'm exposed, I gotta vaccinate myself. At least that I know about. And again, I don't know much, but I do know a little bit more about viruses than I did a couple weeks ago. And it seems kind of weird that there's this clear vaccine that all Dharma people have to inject themselves with every 9 days. I like it. Crazy X-Files stuff. And then, as with all unanswered questions, a great place to start Lost 2. Just, you know, guys, when you want to get that television show off the ground. Somebody asked me if the,
According to Lostpedia, there are no known post-exposure medications that are given on a weekly basis for years at a time in the real world.
Yes!
Although some vaccines, such as one for hepatitis B, require 2 to 3 shots for full effectiveness.
Yeah, like stages. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Good job, Dave. You've been reading panic medical articles basically correctly about when I could go outside again.
I was looking at the logo on the hash by Yurtville. And, that's the unidentified door logo. And I'm like, they were really home by five on that one. They're like,
rectangle hatch.
For this door, I don't know. Let's put a door on it. And, we'll come back to it. And the reader, they didn't.
It's the door station. So the door leads to more mysteries.
You just open the door.
Yep.
It's just, you're in the jungle. It's like, hey, yep. How'd you get here? All right. So that's that. Also, I love that, this wouldn't have occurred to me, but, someone else pointed out that, you know, as Libby is being buried, Libby's boat appears on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Libby's
definitely
boat.
Libby's boat.
Yes, Libby's boat. Yeah, for people who are listening for the first time, Desmond's in that boat. And you'll find out in the finale that Libby gave him that boat. And he tried to get away, but oops, he was too sexy and Scottish. And the Lost fandom demanded
just
he not...
Just when I think I've escaped, they pull me back in.
Because I'm too sexy and Scottish.
Yep.
So, Desmond's back again.
Yeah, it's a whole Desmond episode, in fact, next week. He's the flashback, he's the main guy, sort of.
I'm also happy to report that we will be catching up with Miss Klug, but I remembered her as Beatrice, so I'm happy that we don't have to stick with Miss Clue for too long in terms of just like a mystery person.
Yeah, Beatrice Clue.
Yeah, I'm psyched. I was surprised rewatching this how much it like gave me a taste for not hating the first 5 episodes of season 3, like I'm pretty sure I do. But like this, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, we're about to enter like others and like all the other mysteries and like spine surgery. And I know in my mind that I don't enjoy those episodes, but this is priming me to really want those episodes where I'm just like, just more others mystery things. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, like weeks. I said in the column, up to this point, it's a real tease situation. We do not actually know a ton about the others. I mean, to the point where we don't even know Ben's name is Ben. It's kind of wild how far we've gotten into the show without knowing without really getting any substantial information about the operation of the others until pretty much this episode where we see, well, I guess we get a little bit of it with the Ethan thing, but we sort of see the hierarchy. We meet, what's that guy's name that I already forgot? The guy who's taking a pee.
Pickens.
Who, we're not gonna like at all for a long time. Maybe forever. No. I don't think I ever liked that guy.
I think he dies on the beach and you're like, good.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, not gonna miss that guy.
Take that, Pickens.
I don't like you.
But yeah, I think it's
I think Pickens is dating, what's her name from Deadwood, who like sun shoots. And so he's like, no, I have a backstory too. I have reasons to be in such a bad mood.
No, my flashback episode. No.
But still, when he dies, I'm like, good. I don't like it at all. Anyway.
Yeah. I would be curious to see what our calmies think is in the boat. Like, you know, who even knows?
Oh, yeah. Well, so.
Or what our calmies think they know about the others.
To also catch people up who maybe hadn't seen it, we will get some more answers on what they were doing with Walt, but I don't know how satisfying they are given the whole like Walt arc, but the tests they're putting him in is in that fucking room 23, which we'll get to see at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they're just like, overloading his senses. Anyway.
It's like the brainwashing thing.
Yeah. Yeah, at some point he does something in that room which frightens everybody, which apparently, you know, motivates the need to ask Michael questions at all.
He summons the visage of a tall, soggy Shannon.
I don't think they say exactly what he does, but he does something that scares some of the others who are supposed to be monitoring him while he's in that room. So the others at this point, if you're questioning why they would give Walt up or even make the faint towards giving Walt up, they've also sort of hit a wall with studying Walt's.
Can I tell you something else really quickly about Miss Clue?
Yes,
please do.
Do you know her first name?
Yeah, Beatrice.
Beatrice.
Yeah. So B.
Yeah, be a clue.
Be a clue.
That's what she's there to do. She's there to be a clue.
Anyway, I forgot how she died, and so I looked it up, and there she is in season 3. Mikhail shoots. Good old Mikhail. Kills.
Good old Mikhail.
I love Mikhail. I don't care how many women he kills.
So, another.
Well, enough.
Joanna's feelings on others seem to just vary wildly. So there's no general bar about what you are and are allowed to do. It's just a feeling.
Anytime Mikhail shows up, I'm in a good mood. Even if it's Charlie's about to die. Because, like, that's such a good episode. Anyway, sorry. We don't need to talk about Mikhail yet.
Well, we will get to Mikhail. Because we're close to the end of season 3, correct
season
me if
two,
I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Season 2. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we've been, you know, going through life with a podcast Twitter banner that's from the end of the series. But are we only down to like a Faraday before we could show everybody and everybody knows who those people are? Is the end of season 2 like our main group of characters? Like, you get some Widmore and stuff, but that's not.
Well, you got, you know, the other big characters that we've yet to meet.
Juliet.
Oh, Juliet.
Faraday. Miles. I think Miles is a... Well,
Miles
maybe.
Miles is a big... Like, Miles sticks around a lot... Like, he sticks around longer than Faraday. He sticks around a lot
That's
longer
true.
than you initially remember, I think.
Right.
And Faraday
and
makes this huge
what's his
initial...
name's son, so...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Faraday makes this huge initial impact, but, like, Miles is the one who actually really sticks around, so...
Then we learn about their parents and stuff, but that... Oh, and Richard. We haven't gotten Richard yet.
Oh.
But I guess he's also like side.
And don't forget Ilana and Caesar.
Don't forget Nikki and Paolo, who we are about to meet. We are like a week away from meeting Nikki and Paolo, right? Season 3.
Alana and Caesar are like, it's two of the funniest things that happen on the show. I think it's even funnier than Nikki and Paolo, because like, Nikki and Paolo, at least like you can really see what they were trying before they're like, well, that didn't work. But with Alana and Caesar, they're like, we'll figure it out. We didn't ever figure it out.
And you're here. They're here. They're still here on the island.
We don't know. Okay. Yes, I think we're close. We're getting there.
Yeah, we're almost at a full deck of people that we could talk about without having to beep ourselves, which is, you know, it's going to be fun. I don't know. I'm psyched for next week. I'm psyched to watch it with the our Patreon members, and I'm excited to close off season two and be able to, you know, look at it as one whole again. I don't feel as confident as I did with my Lost as the antagonist of season one theory as I do at the end of season two. I remember him being a lot more crotchety, but that's okay. He has some fun cabin searching and wheel pushing coming up.
He actually seems like he's really chilled out since he found out he was part of a psychological experiment. He's like, yeah, well, nothing matters now. I'm going to be on the beach.
I'm confused, but... Fair enough. I guess I don't get to be right all seasons. Actually, Walt's still on the computer, so I guess I get to be right about different things every season. Are we good with this week's storm?
What else did I want to talk about? Oh, the tent city. Do we ever see that again?
We see it next week, but not after next week.
After that, right? Like, do you think that was just like there? For when they need to role play being dirty indigenous people of the island.
Yeah, I guess.
Or like, did they, you know, put it up really quickly? Or like, what's with that?
Seems like the only explanation is that that's what they use it for. It's like, if someone shows up on the island and we have to,
we have to
bring them somewhere other than Dharmaville.
And like, once again, I think they just abandoned that because that concept, because every other time we see the others camping, they're like in the valley. I mean, it's like they use those army tents. They're like in the valley. We never see them try to pull this garbage again.
Yeah.
You could only fool them with Yurtville once.
Do you think this is a Ben
door
scheme?
Door hatch.
Do you think Ben, who maybe has a flair for the dramatic, was like, I know. Fake beards.
Or maybe this is a Tom Friendly special. He's like, Ben's gone, I'm doing my idea for once.
I 100% think that's it. Like, Ben's the one who's like, okay, so we look like we're jungle people and we do beards. And Tom's like, great, great. And then Ben gets kidnapped and Tom's like, oh no. So we get our spare yurts and we set them up on a beach where we never go to and we pretend we're yurt people. And people are like, this is why you're not in charge, Tom.
So, this is the Pala Ferry is what this like location's called. And, I guess we see it again in season three when when Pickens' girlfriend gets shot. I think it happens because that's where they
so happy.
They dock the Elizabeth there. Well, I just think it's funny that we come back around to this.
Pickens.
It's what's her name? It's Trixie from, Deadwood. I don't remember that actress's name. She's great. She was on Ray Donovan and Sons of Anarchy. She's Irish. Anyway, Paula Malcolm? I think I got it. Anyway, she's barely on Lost. She should be on Lost more. But yeah, I just think this is it's a really interesting and like elaborate location for them to like not really use again. And maybe they just like couldn't get that shooting location again or something like that. But that's what that's what's so funny about the final season of Lost. It's like, I can accept that on a jungle of Mystery Island, there will be locations like you can't get to until the island is ready for you to get to them, right? Like that's the whole thing between the golden light cork cave.
Oh yeah, the wheel.
Right? Well, the wheel. The wheel is in a station. That's fine. Cause it's like underground or whatever. But then there's
the
moving cabin, but then there's like in the final season, there's like the cliff cave with the like,
with all the names,
the names, and the ladder,
the lighthouse or whatever
the lighthouse, which is another location. And then the statue, it's like, there's all these like huge, can't miss it. There's a giant like seaside ladder to it, locations that we don't see until the final season. And I just think it's funny. That's all. All right.
They already planted the cable for the underwater station, but you're right. Yes. That everything else kind of gets a little mystery wibbly wash.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a scene in somewhere in season three when they're like looking at the island from the other island where the cages are. And they're like, oh my God, it's so much bigger than we thought. And it's just like, yeah, it's really big. There's a lot of stuff on that island you're not going to see for several years.
There's a whole three more whole seasons of stuff on that island.
Yep.
There's a whole temple with a whole other sect of others that are managed in some way we haven't figured out yet. It's okay. We have seasons to figure that out. It's fine. All right, guys. I think that's going to do it for 3 minutes. Neil, where are we headed next week?
Oh, we are going to the season finale. This is a two-parter, and it is called Live Together, Die Alone. It is a Desmond episode. It also stands as terrible advice for 2020. Live together, die alone. It's actually the reverse. Big season finale. Don't forget, if you are a member of our Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, and you are in the Slack, we are going to watch it with all of our Slack people on Sunday afternoon.
4 p.m.
Damn
Pacific.
Right.
4 p.m. Pacific. Yeah, that 4 one. 4 p.m. Oh, I guess Pacific. Sunday evening, my time.
The distinction between afternoon and evening is definitely the most important part about that announcement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Until we join you guys to watch Lost in Our Slack or talk about it on this podcast, where can people find more of your work around the internet? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. I would be most appreciative if you would tune into our podcast, Still Watching Mrs. America, which we are doing over there. This week we have Rose Byrne and Tracy Ullman. Last week we had Uzo Aduba, Kate Blanchett, and Dobby Waller, the creator of Mrs. America, a show that I'm really enjoying, and I hope you are too. And I hope you'll tune into that podcast, or you can tweet at me at Joe Wrote This.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, at Twitter, at Rejects, on Twitter, at One Perfect Shot as well. And don't forget to follow our show at Storm Podcast.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You could hear me talk about other stuff on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. And you could hear me every week right here telling you not to fall down. It's very dangerous. Don't fall down.